Cultivating fish and other aquatic organisms, rather than harvesting them from open waters, is another crucial way to protect endangered fisheries and other marine species. Just as humans made the transition from hunting and gathering to agriculture around 10,000 years ago, they now need to make the same transition regarding the aquatic harvest. This blue revolution can match the green revolution and can relieve the pressure on the oceans, but only if the aquaculture is managed in an environmentally sound manner. Aquaculture includes a number of practices: fish farming, typically in ponds for freshwater fish, carp, tilapia, catfish, or ocean species, salmon; mariculture, which is farming in seawater of shrimp, mollusks, and ocean fish; and algiculture, which is the farming of algae and kelp. Fish farming reduces the demand for ocean catch to the extent that the farmed fish are herbivorous. When the fish are carnivorous, as with salmon, it takes between 1 and 3 kilograms of fish meal caught from the sea to raise 1 kilogram of salmon, thus typically representing a net ocean burden. Aquaculture is booming, led by China, partly the result of favorable economics and partly the reflection of brilliant breakthroughs that have raised the productivity and reliability of fish farms. Most of China's farmed fish are herbivorous, especially carp species, and China's total fish farm output has risen from roughly 2 metric tons in 1980 to around 35 million metric tons today. Worldwide, fish farming is now running at about 50 million tons per year, around half of the worldwide ocean catch, which has peaked at around 100 million metric tons. Fish farming has accounted for all of the increase in the world's fish consumption during the past decade. Reviving global cooperation before 2010. There is still time to rescue something of the shockingly neglected 2010 goal of biodiversity conservation. Given the stakes involved, it would be devastating to arrive at 2010 without progress, yet that is the course we are now following. By combining actions on the following 10 fronts, it is still possible for the world to regain its footing. 1. The United States should ratify the Convention on Biological Diversity. The absence of the United States is a scandal and tragedy. The next president should prepare to put the CBD before the U.S. Senate in early 2009. 2. The world should arrive at 2010 with renewed global cooperation on population control, the Millennium Development Goals, and climate change, including the post-Kyoto settlement to be negotiated under the UNFCCC, all of which are crucial inputs for biodiversity conservation. 3. We should agree by 2010 to establish significant new protected areas, both terrestrial and marine, focusing on biodiversity hotspots under special threat. 4. We should increase international funding for biodiversity protected areas by several billion dollars per year and direct the increase to the poorest countries through the Global Environment Facility, GEF. 5. We should guarantee dedicated funding for avoided deforestation in the new post-Kyoto global climate strategy. 6. We should ban all bottom trawling in the open seas. 7. The Antarctic Ocean, which is under increasing threat, should be established as a marine protected area in the same way that the Antarctic terrestrial habitats are now protected by the Antarctic Treaty. 8. We can eliminate one of the major sources of invasive species by requiring ocean vessels to heat treat their ballast water, thereby killing potential invasive species, or to exchange the ballast water in the open sea rather than at port. 9. We should establish regulations under the CBD to ensure that aquaculture facilities use sustainable practices, including the farming of native species in coastal or oceanic waters, to prevent the release of invasive species and shift to herbivorous species and feeding practices that do not multiply the pressures on the open sea. 10. We should establish a worldwide, sustained, scientific effort on global biodiversity conservation, with several components. A commission on biodiversity and macroeconomics would recommend guidelines for appropriate global pricing and regulation of ecosystem services of global consequence, such as conservation of endangered species, liability for the introduction of invasive species, enforcement of trade restrictions on endangered species, and global environmental levies or limits on various pollutants. A Millennium Ecosystem Fund, perhaps housed at the Global Environment Facility, would help developing countries to incorporate environmental sustainability into their overall development strategy. The fund would enable local scientists to carry out comprehensive national ecosystem service assessments and continuous monitoring. The costs for global environmental sustainability need not break the bank either. Conservation International concluded that substantial protection for 70% of land-dwelling flora and fauna could be achieved with a one-time payment of $30 billion to protect the 25 most important spots on the planet in terms of biodiversity, including the remaining tropical forest wilderness in the Amazon, Congolian Basin, and New Guinea. Another study found that a global reserve network covering 20 to 30% of the oceans would cost between $5 billion and $19 billion annually, which could be met by cutting subsidies to the fishing industry. The Millennium Ecosystem Assessment should be institutionalized as an ongoing program, charged with providing up-to-date reports on the state of global biodiversity at least every 5 years, much as the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change does successfully with climate. A web-based Encyclopedia of Life is a brainchild of E.O. Wilson. Wilson has wisely argued that we will not succeed in conserving biodiversity unless we also create the tools for success, including an encyclopedia of the world's species in order to understand the targets and dimensions of the needed conservation effort.